All right, I think we are ready to get started. Are we good on audio? Ooh.
Mood lighting.
We'll be dimming the lights to enhance the features of your presentation. Or presenter.
Yeah. It's like a sea of hair now.
Presenter is what I mean. Do we have to have the lights off like that, really?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Well, welcome everyone back from lunch. We hope it was good, but not that good, because if it was that good, you'd have eaten too much of it, and that makes our job harder for the next 75 minutes. My name is Scott Kate. I'm from Scottsdale, Arizona, and I am a developer. And I live inside Visual Studio, and I have lots of tips and tricks that make my life easier, and I'm here with my good friend Dustin Campbell, who is responsible for Control Comma.
I actually live totally inside Visual Studio. I work for Microsoft. I work on the Visual Studio team. I'm actually right now, I work on Project Roslyn, which is rebuilding some of the C# and Visual Basic compilers and doing a lot of that work. So I am also a developer.
So why are you here is the first question that we would like to answer. We want to get the most out of Visual Studio 2010. That's probably the IDE that you guys are using on a day-to-day basis. We also have some new stuff with Visual Studio 2012, which is exciting. That will entice you to get some of the new bits installed. But I want to make this very clear. This is not a what's new in Visual Studio 2012 talk. This is a you can be a better developer using the tips and tricks that we show you talk. Good?
Yeah.
You guys like that? So some of the tips and tricks are not new. Some of them you may have heard. In fact, I've had a couple people tweet us that they came last year and the year before. Dustin and I have kind of teamed up on this, and we've been around the world delivering this talk, and every time we do it, it gets better and better. So you'll have some classic repeats, which is great for all the people that are new and haven't seen the talk, but undoubtedly there will be something for everyone, including all the way back to Visual Studio 2005.
And earlier, actually. Yeah, some of these things have been around for years and years, decades. So
that is the quick lay of the land. And again, our goal is ultimate time saving. So there's lots of keyboard shortcuts. It's very keyboard intensive. I'd rather not use the mouse if I don't have to pick up my hand to go to the house or the trackpad to do something specific. So we're going to do a lot of keyboard shortcuts. That should make you happy. Yes?
Yeah.
You have keyboard bindings to a couple of different things in your Visual Studio. We have ours set to C# 2005 is the profile. And so the keyboard shortcuts that we list are listed for C#, and we'll also show you how to read this legend so that if you have Visual Basic installed or if you have a different profile installed, the keyboard shortcuts may be a little different, but the goal is that you know they're there, right?
So just kind of more of this lay of the land. We are going to go very, very, very fast. We're going to try and really pack a lot in. We were looking, trying to count up. We got like hundreds of tips, like 100 tips here, more than 100 tips. And so trying to get that in 75 minutes is going to be a challenge. So we're going to do our best. And trust us, the tips, the shortcuts, they're in the slide deck. So when you get the materials from this talk, you'll have that as a resource. One other thing is that we're going to be using Visual Studio 2012 RC because it's kind of awesome. But also, we just didn't want to flip back and forth between different versions of Visual Studio. We are going to show some Visual Studio 2012 specific stuff. Notice in the legend down here where it says, Visual Studio 2010, or it says Visual Studio 2010 plus the Pro Power Tools. How many people here are familiar with the Pro Power Tools for Visual Studio 2010? Okay, so some of the things we show in Visual Studio 2012, there were early looks of that, those features in Visual Studio 2010 plus the Pro Power Tools. So if you're on Visual Studio 2010 and you want to get some of that goodness, you still can. Okay, so we're going. So some of it will be new, but some of it will be like new but still accessible to you today if you don't want to jump onto the RC yet. And so let's just get going. We need to get going.
I wonder if someday we'll see a 12 PPT.
I don't know. We are working on a plan. That is the official word. We just kind of want to address this question. It was going to come up. When's the Pro Power Tools for Visual Studio 2012 coming out? And the answer is, let us finish the product first. We can't go and make all these cool extensions and add-ons until we're actually done and shipped. So we're working on a plan for that. Rest assured, you'll hear about it at some point.
Nice. So the other thing I want to just get kind of the cat out of the bag real quick. There's probably thousands of changes in Visual Studio 2012, right? You guys have seen demos after demos. There's lots of great stuff.
What do you guys hate most of all about that? What do you dislike?
Not hate, love.
Dislike. What do you dislike about Visual Studio 2012? What's that? All caps menus? Did I hear that? Oh.
So there is one change that happened, which was the all caps menu. And there are some things that you've probably already read online that help change that. So we've actually put up a quick...
So this is what it looks like today. This is the RC after an install. Yes, I mean, we've done a lot of work with the UX refresh here to really... and took a lot of feedback from the beta. I'm going to share a little bit about that in a moment. But these all cast menus have been such a point of contention with you guys, and you've lost us lots of really great feedback. We went ahead and we tried to, you know, improve upon this. But really, when we dropped it down to lowercase, it was harder, you know, kind of to read. We wanted that extra clarity that we got with all caps. So I went ahead and cleaned this up a little bit for you. So now it looks like this. Is this okay?
Yeah.
Do you prefer we ship it like that? It's like 36 point font, which is okay. It's not a bad joke.
That's all a right. joke. It's not.
We're not actually
that way.
Doing this.
But there is something important on that screen, and that is if you look at the letters ILE and file.
Yeah.
They're different. So my point is to bring that up, that if the all caps thing really drives you nuts, then there is definitely a way to change it, right? So that's good. And with that, we're going to jump over to another machine. And I'm on the view menu here, and I'll particularly bring up the start page. Now, the start page has a ton of new stuff on it. Some of this came from Visual Studio 2010. Mm-hmm. Some of it's very obvious. Some of it is not so obvious. So I'm going to use Windows Zoom and zoom in on a couple of things here just to show you. Some people don't like the start page to stay open after they open their project. So it's very easy to toggle that behavior. Click close, click show. Show this page on startup. If you'd actually uncheck that, it will not come up, which increases the speed ever so slightly of your Visual Studio start experience. You also have the ability to pin projects. Now, in my super zoom view here, you can see I'm kind of scrolling through, but these are projects that I work on a regular basis. And if you pin a project there, that means that no matter how many projects you open or close, it will continue to be on that list. Now, there's also the ability to remove from list on a context menu. That's great for consultants. How many of you are consultants? You do lots of things for lots of people. If you go from company A to company B, it's kind of weird for company A stuff to show up. So it's very easy to clean up that list or the most recently used list. I want to zoom down to the bottom of my screen and talk about a feature of Windows 7 and Windows 8. Both have this. It's not really a Visual Studio tip, but it's very helpful for all of us that are using Visual Studio because most of us are using multiple instances of Visual Studio at the same time. So everybody knows about Alt-Tab, right? There's not a single person in here, but that's inclusive of your entire machine. So Alt-Tab is going to cycle through all kinds of stuff that is probably not of interest to you. But in combination with the Windows key, you have a couple of things that you can do. So for example, if you do a Windows Shift 1, 2, 3, the position here, so my third icon over, Windows 3 by itself is going to do like a Control Tab between that application. Now I only have one of them running, so it's maximizing and minimizing as if I were to click on that icon. But if we want to start a new instance, you can do Windows Shift 3. And now I actually have two versions of Visual Studio running. I have it set to run in elevated mode, so after I say yes to that. Now I have two versions of Studio. And now if I do Windows 3 with the peak, it shows me what to do. So, you know, on your machine, you have 1,000 things open. If you want to just toggle between your Visual Studio instances, Windows key plus the location on your start bar will help you do that. There's also a way to launch this in admin mode. Now, I've changed my shortcut, so you can see down here that I've got the shield there that tells you it's going to launch in admin mode. But if you launch that with the control key as well, so Windows Shift Control 3, will launch that program in admin mode. That's actually great for a command bar or for Notepad if you have to edit a system file. It's a great way to get into system mode. And then there's a little bit faster if you don't have if you don't want to wait for the peak stuff to come on. You can do a Windows Control 3, and that'll actually do the application toggle, but without peak turned on. So using those Windows keys, and again, that's more of a Windows 7 and Windows 8 feature. The last thing that I like to do there is Windows Alt location is going to show you the context menu. I like to use that a lot, particularly if you've gone through an application, maybe it's Internet Explorer or something else where you've opened a lot of instances. If you do a Windows Alt 3, now you can go up to close all windows, enter, and it's a keyboard shortcut to just close all the instances of that application. It's nice for Word, it's nice for Excel, it works great. So there's some quick introductions to the start page. So I'll jump over to Dustin to talk about some other stuff.
All right, so a couple of things I want to talk about first, just some of the differences with Visual Studio 2012 from Visual Studio 2010. Some of the things we took a lot of time working on. One of the key themes as we came into Visual Studio 2012 planning was around simplification, because Visual Studio has gotten a little complicated. How many people think there are too many toolbar buttons, too many commands in Visual Studio? I don't know where anything. Yes, okay, the hands are coming up. That's good. So we spent a lot of effort trying to clean that up. Now, we spent time doing this UX refresh, which to really make it much cleaner, to bring kind of a fresh design, really bringing in some of the Metro look and feel. But also, notice that toolbar underneath the menu bar. Look how many buttons there are there. We spent a lot of time working on reducing the number of commands down to really the set that we know from when you check that customer experience program that you're actually using from the toolbar. So this is really key as part of the kind of simplification, the stuff that you really just need to use. So up here are also navigation buttons that are now moved from the middle of the toolbar, where nobody could find them, it turns out, over to the left where they belong. And you know, you have your run button, you have undo, and save, and that's really about it in the default. So another piece I want to mention about this UX refresh is notice the purple bar down at the bottom, the bright purple bar. This is kind of let you know what state Visual Studio is kind of in at the moment. Right now, it is purple, which means it's in the default mode. If you've been by the Visual Studio booth, we're all about purple these days, and so that's kind of the default state of Visual Studio is purple. However, if I open a solution, now I'm blue. Okay, this means I'm in development mode. I'm ready to start developing my application. If I build, now this might be, I don't know how the contrast will look, but it's slightly darker blue when it's building. Okay, and if I go ahead and F5, then it goes orange. Okay, so if I come back to my instance of Visual Studio and I don't have the locals and the call stack and all of that up, and I can't tell that it's debugging, right? How many people have done that and they go to edit their code and it's like, oh no, it's read only. Well, look, there's an orange bar now. You know that it's in debug mode without any problems. So, one last thing I want to mention here as part of this is with this new theme, we really wanted to go after those of you that really, when you look at yourselves in the mirror in the morning, you see Darth Vader instead of Luke Skywalker. Okay? You really see yourself as a Sith Lord and not a Jedi. And so if you go to Tools, Options, and just in the very first general page, there is now a new dark theme, okay? And this really kind of gives that sort of darker look and feel. Wow, I actually saw the light in the room just dim from this, right? But that darker look and feel that a lot of people really there's a whole set of customers that really like this sort of immersive sort of environment. And so we wanted to give that to you in 2012, okay?
That is a lot more popular than a lot of people think.
Absolutely. I do it myself. I when I look in the mirror, it's more Darth Maul. But yeah. All right.
Nice. Let's jump over to Twitter and see if we have anything quick on that machine. See if we've got an answer. Waiting for the projector to update. Will pin projects start to the top, float to the top? The answer to that is yes. As you pin them, they stay in place. But the next time you restart Studio, the pinned projects will come up to your MRU, your most recently used list. And does VS 12 finally replace all the great functionality of front page? 98. The answer to that is, I think, I guess. I don't know. Is that a trick question?
You've got to be more clear about all the great functionality in front page 98.
So what I want to do now is focus on some document management. And all of us like our Visual Studio.
Ooh.
Just kidding. Let's try this. Off. On.
Ooh.
What'd you do?
Let's try this. Off. We switched to the HDMI feed.
Uh-huh.
So that might blow our Twitter demos. Back. Yes?
Maybe?
Oh.
Hmm. Why don't you do your search, and
that
I'll
works
work
fine.
On this.
Switch it over to 6. Okay, so what I want to talk about right now, and this is something that is actually in Visual Studio 2010 and the Pro Power Tools. It's a little harder to find, but because it's right up here at the very top right corner, you see this quick launch feature. That is your entry point into so much of Visual Studio, tool windows and options and menus. If you can't find something, press Control-Q and type it, and it should be there. In the Pro Power Tools, I believe it is Control-3, I think, is the keyboard shortcut for VS with the Pro Power Tools. But if I come up here, I can type something like, say, project, and I'll get the project options, I'll get all the menus from the project that have project in them. And so it's really searching a whole ton of Visual Studio functionality, kind of those UI pieces, so that you can get quick access to them. So if I just go ahead and hit enter, I'll go right there, okay, and I can execute commands from here. Now, but the question is, what if I just want to find options? Okay, so here's the tip. When you go up here, make sure you type at. And at will allow you to apply a custom filter to just search for a specific sort of thing. So if I just want to find, say, the project options, I could type opt, project, and there we go. And I hit enter, and it brings it up. Okay? Likewise, this is really great because in the RC at least, it doesn't even have to populate before you press enter for it to actually go there. So if I'm just typing really fast, and let's see if I can do this, and if I just type like team and hit enter, and it just brings it right up before it even had a chance to paint, so you can continue to be as productive as you want. You're not sitting there waiting for the menu to draw or for the search to finish. It'll just go there. Okay? And of course, I'm not connected to anything, so we get nothing in Team Explorer. Now, another piece of search that we've added, this little dropdown is pretty cool. We like it a lot. And we like it so much that we tried to use it everywhere we could in Visual Studio 2012. Now, this is something that is, oh, well, thank you,
thanks.
Scott.
I'll give you the applause for that, because I use that constantly. Search everywhere, right?
So in the Solution Explorer, which was called the Solution Navigator in Pro Power Tools, so again, you have this functionality there, there's a shortcut to get to the search bar. Okay, right here I can press Control semicolon. That brings me up there, and I can just type the same sorts of, just type a word, and it'll filter down my solution showing me those pieces. Now again, this is in the Pro Power Tool, so you can do this there as well. Now when you use this search everywhere, this is kind of it's sort of a unified search. We took this same search box and we put it on a bunch of windows. And when you go to these different windows, you're gonna find different options. So for example, we got some feedback from folks that said, hey, we really don't like that it searches down into the files. We just want to search files alone. Well, you can ask for that. You can say, search within file contents. No, I don't want that. I just want to see files, for example. Okay. There's also search within external items I can check as well. So that is used in C++. So this is a new search that offers enough flexibility, but you can get around your entire project much faster than you could with just the base 2010 or 2008. Other places where we've added the search, and these are kind of like applause points for people that have dealt with this, like the toolbox, we've added search. So if I bring up, for example, let me bring up a designer. I'm just going to bring up a class diagram. Here in the toolbox, I can now search in here, or rather filter, I guess. In the error list, there is also search right here. Okay, so we've really added it everywhere we can think of. I can even use earlier I showed how I could use Control Q and then bring up the Team Explorer very quickly. I could also just press Control apostrophe, and that'll bring up the Team Explorer because there's a search bar there that where Control apostrophe is the command to get in there to search for work items. Okay, so really getting the keyboard shortcuts and learning where all this unified search is all throughout the IDE. One last piece I want to demonstrate on this, and this is really key, for Visual Studio 2010 with Pro Power Tools and VS 2012, and that is the new add reference dialog. Okay? So you don't have to wait for the add reference dialog anymore. That came up really quickly, right? But there's also a search bar. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't tell you what the shortcut for that search bar is, but it's Control E.
It's pretty much, it's almost Control E everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, except inside, in modal dialogs.
There's
right?
some exceptions, yeah. but mostly it's Control E.
So Control E will take you right up there. Suppose I want speech. Okay, fine. Now I tab, space to check that, tab. Okay, now I've added system.speech. Okay, so very, very quickly.
All from the keyboard.
All from the keyboard. I can also, that's the same shortcut inside the new project dialog. So I just press Control Shift N to bring up the new project dialog. Control E takes me up there as well. So this appears all over the place in the IDE. So search, and if you're using the Pro Power tools, a lot of that's there, especially in the Solution Explorer. Mm. Oh, you're still
no good.
Still in dire shape.
Let's try to reseed this while it's hot.
It is a Macintosh.
HDMI.
Hey. Oh, that's me.
Yeah. It's been on all day. It was working. 1366.
Yes, sir. Actually, yeah, Tim Heuer. Tell me, do we have some questions? Will there be third-party themes available? It's an interesting question. I'm not actually 100% sure about that. However, we have committed to putting out a kind of a color theme tool that you can use to build
That's
Visual
good.
Studio themes. That's
right
in the works. And I assume some people will be able to put out some color themes. It's not actually very easy to do. It's not like changing your editor colors. It's actually very involved. But I think that's definitely a possibility.
I've seen people load community themes from 2010, and then the upgrade maintains them.
Yeah.
So that's good. Okay, so he's still working on the KVM, but I'm going to go ahead and get started, and we're going to dive into window and document management. So windows left, right, ooh, ha, ee, ha, up, down, woo. Same thing, kind of a Windows feature. What I wanted to show with this is something that Dustin just touched on. If you tear something off now, it becomes its own full window. So this is great for multi-mon support. So I can now dock to the left and to the right. Obviously, I can't show two monitors because we're working here on a projector. But this is now a full, more mature window than it has been in the past. Now, this is a full dockable window. In fact, one of the things that we can do, I have a fairly large project here open with the open source CMS project Orchard. And it's got a lot of projects. In fact, up here in Solution Explorer, one of the nice new things I can do here that's just built in is collapse all. But if I'm working with something on my second or my third monitor, you can right-click at any point in Solution Explorer and open up a new version of the Solution Explorer. So you can actually multi-instance Solution Explorer now. And so now as I've done that, you can see that I've got two of them running side by side. And more particular, as I zoom out, I can now dock that Solution Explorer to my extended window. So remember, that's on a third monitor. It's something totally disconnected. And all the things you know about Solution Explorer work. Search still works. Track still works. Sync to document still works. You have the filters, and everything there is goodness. So that is a trick that's multi-instancing the Solution Explorer. Now, here's something I've found that's not built in that you may want to know about, because I did. You cannot do that from the solution itself. So there's a menu item here that's hidden that is launching another version of Solution Explorer. But really what it's trying to do is launch a scoped Solution Explorer. And so if you jump into Tools Options, one of my favorite tricks, you've seen me do this in the past if you've seen me do presentations, is to jump down to the keyboard and then just start typing what you think that is. So Solution Explorer. And now you see that there's an option here on the menus for Projects and Solutions menu, Project, New Solution Explorer View. Now what I've done is bound that to a keyboard shortcut. If you remember the basic keyboard shortcuts, Control-Alt-L focuses to Solution Explorer. Well, so I did Control-Alt-Shift-L, and I assigned that globally. So what that means is anytime I'm anywhere in Studio, if I want a second instance of studio based on the current scope. I can just do Control-Alt-Shift-L, and now I have a second one that comes up. And I can even do that from Solution Explorer. So there's a second tip. Now I have basically an entire instance of Solution Explorer with everything in it that I can run around the screen. Good stuff?
You can do some of this with the Pro Power tools as well. Okay, so the multi-instancing and the scoping is also there.
So the other thing I wanted to just quickly do while we're dragging windows and different things around the screen is show you some of the context views. So I'll go back into full screen here. I've got three different files open, and if you right-click on one of them, you'll notice that you have this new person here called Pin Tab. Pin Tab is going to do exactly what it says. It's going to pin, and it's going to dock itself to the left of the screen. So you'll see that that just replaced itself with Slug Token. Now, as you open new files, maybe that's your web config or your app config or something that you want to maintain focus there on the screen. So you can also do that right here with the icon. There's also one new thing that we've added. We used to have close all but this, which would leave everything open. Then we have close all but pinned, and now recently we've added close all. You used to have to do close all by coming up to window.
Hey! Yeah. It's close all, but this was so close. It was almost there.
So we've always had close all documents from the window. In fact, one of my keyboard bindings that's just ingrained in my head is Alt-W-L is Alt-W for window menu, and then L closes everything. And now we can do that right here on the window. To make up for the video going out for a second, I'm going to throw one more tip in here, which I use at least 100 times a day. And check this out. So I'm in a code window, and I want to see this file on disk. Watch what happens. Watch the screen. My mouse didn't move, but somehow magically, Explorer opened all the way paths to that file. You guys want to know how I did that? That's pretty cool. So there's two things real quick. First, if you're on a folder, if you right-click, you guys have seen this open folder in Studio. The shortcoming of that is if you go to the file itself, it's not there. And it is actually there, but it's up here on the tab. If you right-click on a tab, this is the same in Studio 2010, there's open containing folder. So what I did is I went to the keyboard shortcuts from the quick launch keyboard. And down here I do open containing folder. And I bound a keyboard shortcut to that, Control-Alt-Shift. Oh, I like that Control-Alt-Shift because it's at the bottom left-hand corner of the keyboard. It's real easy for my left two fingers and my thumb just to hit all
just
those
make
at
a
once.
Claw, just
yeah, exactly, the claw. And also Studio, because it's a little bit more complicated, doesn't have those reserved. So I use Control-Alt-Shift-O to open in open containing folder. And I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I use that at least 100 times a day just to drill down somewhere real quick on disk. 10 more seconds. If we double-click a tool window, you guys know that that is, I'm sorry, click and drag out is going to drag all of the instances that are currently in that tool window. If you did not know, Control-Click will replace it where it was. It kind of says go back home. That's a little bit of a drag if you accidentally pull it out and you want it to go back where it was. So Control-Click. Also, if you Control-Click on a tab, that will pull that one tab out by itself, and then Control-Click will put it back. Okay, so that's good. One last thing with the control. Have you ever wanted to move something around, and we've got these real nice adorners here, and you're like, no, get out of the way. I want it to live right there. If you hold the Control key down while you are dragging these, those go away. Did you know that?
Woo. I didn't know that.
So now I can put
that's awesome.
I can put that window anywhere I want.
So now I can totally obscure my code with that, too. That's fantastic.
Nice. So we skipped a section just a moment ago to give it over to Justin with the video problem. So let me just jump into Solution Explorer, which I've kind of gone over a little bit. But in particular, my favorite new feature of Visual Studio 2012 with regards to Solution Explorer is Preview Selected Item. So if I turn that on, you can see there's a little blue box around it. Now, kind of watch over here in the file editor as I just single-click a file. It's in preview mode. That means that every time you open a file, or even if you hover over an image, you'll get a tooltip that shows you what that image is. Now, imagine if I just looked at 15 files. What happens to my document well up at the top? Now it just got cluttered with 15 files, right? Or not, because the preview files actually live over here. They turn purple as you're previewing them. So now I'm going to zoom out and show you how this works. So I'll go to preview A, B, C. See how they're just docked over there? If I make a change to a file, watch the space key, and pay attention to the tab up at the top. Now it becomes active. This works the same if you're navigating code from anywhere. Solution Explorer gives you that preview file. You can also F12, go to definition. And when you go to definition on something, if the file's already open, it'll be open and active. But if it's not, it will show up in that preview mode. So now, as you know, you're debugging and you step into 13 files, and now you've cluttered your document tab. Now those are pinned and
previews, rather.
I'm sorry, previews. Thank you. And it's very easy, extremely helpful to have that preview window on. All right.
Yep. Now that is 2012 only. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a 12. That's a new feature in 12.
Sorry. Boo. Yeah, yeah.
Focus your attention on the toolbar here, and this is also extremely helpful.
I love this. This is new in the RC. So if you were using VS 2012 beta, it's not there.
So first I'll show you by keyboard shortcut. Look at my Solution Explorer over here. I think there are 62 projects in this file, in this solution. It's actually the reason I chose it, because it's really healthy. There's a lot of code in here. But I'm looking at maybe six or 10 files that are open. So watch my Solution Explorer. My Solution Explorer just got filtered to only show me what's open. So now if you have 15 things open and it's too hard to navigate across the top, you can just filter your Solution Explorer. There's two filters. The keyboard shortcut is Control square brace or open brace with a combination of O for only open files or P for files pending changes if you're tied into TFS. So that is really nice to see only the active files that you're working with, either only open or only pending. And it's Control square brace, Control open square brace, O, and that'll toggle it on or off. So now it's my all of my Solution Explorer or pending changes. So those things are extremely helpful. So I'm going to bring you over to navigation.
Oh, wait, you want to show the pivot?
Oh, you know what? Let me do that when I do the diagrams.
Perfect. All right. So six. There we go. All right. So I have a project up. Or I do now. I got a few files open. The idea here is I want to talk about the simplified navigation. Now, this is a set of commands, keyboard shortcuts that have been there since, I don't know, a long time, pre-VS 2005. Okay? But most people didn't know the shortcuts. Most people couldn't find the buttons on the toolbar. Now these are over here. Okay? So this is our navigate backward, navigate forward. So if I start moving around some files, or if I move around to different locations in those files, for example, now if I want to go back to where I was, it's Control minus. And I can walk backwards through the stack. And the stack actually appears here. You can see the entire stack that shows a line of code with a giant comment, which is clearly not helpful, but that's fine. Just the solution that I'm working in. Control shift minus goes the other direction, I believe. Yes, there we go. So Control minus and then Control shift minus goes the other way. Okay, so this is kind of our main navigation stack inside Visual Studio. It's also great because it works with the preview tab. So if I have something that came in from a preview, like for example, if I started F12ing through files and something showed up in the preview tab, so if I use go to definition, then when I go back through, it stays there as a preview. Let me do one more just to kind of drill this home. So I'll go to this one as well. So now I've got something else in the preview. As I walk backwards through this, they stay in the preview tab. They don't start opening up and filling my document well. We just want to try and make sure that we understand what that context was that you were in, so that we're keeping the files open and not messing with that and kind of, you know, raining on your parade in the document well. So I mentioned go to definition with F12. One thing that's not well known, it's sort of like this simplified navigation, might not actually be as important anymore because we've made this navigation so important. so prominent. But it's there is actually a stack that is specifically the items that you've been using go to definition on. Okay, so I can go to definition on, actually I can go to definition on just about anything in C sharp, because if I go to definition on, say, bool here, which is .NET type, it takes me to, we call metadata, we call this metadata as source. It's actually gone to the reference assembly, kind of consed up a C sharp like view of what the Boolean type might look like, and then we can kind of crawl through this. So, and I can go to definition on these as well, right, and just start walking through. I can see system.object if I care to. But this is really useful, especially when you're using libraries. Maybe not the .NET framework, that's a little more contrived for some of these types. But if I'm using a library that I have built and I'm using and I want to see, okay, what are the methods available to me? What does this API shape look like on some class? I can F12 to that and see that. And then the go to definition stack, which is Control-Shift-7 and Control-Shift-8, take me back through the places where I did go to definitions exclusively. Okay, so if I, so it's kind of separate from the navigation, the regular navigation stack. If I just want to go back and say, oh, what was that thing I did in F12 to about 5 minutes ago? Control-Shift-8, Control-Shift-7 will get you back there. All right, so one more piece on kind of this metadata as source. We showed earlier, actually just simply because you were trying to dock it in the middle of your code window.
All right.
The code definition window. The keyboard shortcut for this is Control-WD. And in the C-sharp profile, almost all window shortcuts that open windows start with the Control-W as part of a keyboard chord where you type two things. And this will show you, as you move your caret around, it'll show you that what go to definition would show you in that window down there. So it also works with metadata as source. So if I come down to something like string and just wait for a sec, we'll see string appear down there. Okay. So this is great, especially in today's kind of, you know, with multiple monitors, you have this up on another desktop, and you kind of have a view of, well, what's that thing I'm on? Well, it's always showing over here and giving that sort of context. Okay, now the opposite of F12 is Shift F12, right? Anybody know what Shift F12 does? Oh, no, silence. Find all references. Okay, so F12 takes me to the definition. Shift F12 finds me all the references to that definition. Okay, so I come in here and I say Shift F12 on molecule, and that'll, well, it'll search the entire solution, which is, actually, this is a very big one. There we go. And that'll show me a list of everything down here. Now, tip, the keyboard shortcut to navigate these, if you don't want to just, okay, now I'm in another tool window, and I don't want to mouse through
Does
that.
Does anybody know what it is?
Anybody know? It's the least discoverable key in the entire IDE.
So if nobody knows, that means everyone will leave learning at least one thing.
So F8 will just simply navigate you through this list. Notice that it also opens up things in the preview tab if it's not already open in your tab well. Okay, so I'm just
and
pressing
Shift
F8.
F8 goes backwards.
And Shift F8 goes backwards.
That's cool, right? And cycles all the way
useful.
Around.
Works in the find results window, find symbol results window, really any sort of list window in Visual Studio, F8 and Shift F8 will navigate through it like that. All right, now two more tips in this navigation sort of space. First is Navigate 2. Now, this was added in Visual Studio 2010, so and it's not in the Pro Power Tools. It's just part of the base product, but it is Control Comma. If I press Control Comma, that brings up a dialog that I can just simply type in and find all the members and types within my entire solution. Now, one piece I want to also make a note of in Visual Studio 2012 and also in the Pro Power Tools is in Solution Explorer Search, you also get that same sort of view across your solution, right? So if I type Adam here, I also see it. But it's instead of being a big flat list that's got some sorting, and it's sorted in my solution order and nested like that. Okay, so that's brand new. That's Control Comma is Navigate 2. And then finally, and this is perhaps my favorite for navigating like open documents. Like if I've got a bunch of documents pinned, I'm working within those documents, and I simply want to just kind of move between them, I will often use Control Alt Down, and that opens that little menu under that triangle with that triangle right at the very end of the document tab well. And then you can just keep typing. I could just type the name of the file, enter, and go there. Okay, so that's a really great way to get to activate one of your open files.
How many of you knew that Control Alt Down? Nobody. Oh,
just Scott.
Two or three.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome.
So almost everybody has two things now. So what do you guys think? So far, so good? Want some more?
Dial it up. Okay.
I've caught myself saying this is my favorite thing like three times.
Yeah,
so,
seriously.
I have to start scoping those. So let's jump back over to my machine. And in particular, we're going to focus on Solution Explorer again. One of the things that we showed earlier was the ability to do a search and search within file contents. Now, if you have that turned on, as you navigate, you can actually see all of the types of your file. And as I zoom out, you'll see that my preview tab is opening exactly to that file that I'm highlighting. So it's a very nice feature. I left off with Solution Explorer and didn't show you a feature that we're calling Pivot. Pivot is the ability to right-click and then say, show me everything that is used by this particular method. So that's going to give me what we just talked about with the show all definitions, but now inside my Solution Explorer. And then naturally, if you click those, the preview tab is going to show you them as well. So it's just trying to get you to just quickly navigate to the parts of the source code that you are looking for.
Just one thing. What I really like about these pivots is that, and again, these are something that's in the Pro Power Tools as well, but what I really like about these pivots is that it lets you just learn one window and stick with that. There's things that you don't have to go off to the call hierarchy window. You don't have to go to the find results window. You can just stick with the Solution Explorer and do a bunch of the work that you're doing.
And all the things that you know from one window kind of work in the other ones. Like go to definition works in a lot of places that you wouldn't expect it to. It works here. It works inside the diagrams. Those keyboard shortcuts are really together. And then there's this back arrow as well. So this little blue guy here, if I click that, takes me back to where I just came from. So it's like a quick way to navigate back. So you guys are conference goers. You come to Tech Ed, you'll see some presentations here. And some people are very proud that they can fit all of their code on their screen. Right? It makes for a great presentation. We've actually bumped our fonts up to at least font size 0.12 in all the tool windows and IntelliSense and everything. But if you do present in Visual Studio, you might find yourself in this mode because you've got this gigantic monitor and it's in size 0.4, but when you're sitting at your desk, it shows up really nice. Or you just have smaller fonts that you like to use. If you're presenting, the keyboard shortcut for this is Control-Shift greater than less than will change the font size. You can also control wheel mouse up and down, right? So if you hold the control key down, you can do it with your wheel mouse. That's something new in Studio 2010 that is a very quick way. Now, that's only unique to this window. Right. So if I jump over to this window, you'll see that it's not there. There's some extensions that allow you to carry the font size that you change in one window through all of your open tabs. But default experience out of the box is one by one.
That's a good coding sort of size there. I like
you like this one? Yeah. This is this is how you can code when your manager comes in the room. You're like, oh, what was that? The one thing I don't know how to do is get back to default. So I just kind of go back. This actually isn't changing the font size, by the way. Control, Alt, Shift, it appears to change the font size. It's actually changing the zoom here. And so if I go back to 100%, you'll notice when I do that, it's also bringing up the line numbers and everything else. So it's actually zooming the entire window, but it actually gives us the same experience. So my next tip is multi-line editing. This has been live in Visual Studio since it was called InterDev.
No, the multi-line editing.
I got a couple
not.
Of you.
Only sort of.
So multi-line edit is extremely helpful to have in your bag of tricks, and it gives you the ability to do stuff like this. So in XML, a lot of times you have more than one line that you need to modify. And so if I wanted to do that, I would just click those and then start typing, and I get multi-line edit. So the way that that happens is through the use of your Alt key. And it works both from the keyboard and the mouse. Now, if I just start dragging, I'd naturally get a selection point. But if I hold the Alt key down first and then drag, I get what's called box mode. And now I can multi-select. Copy paste works here. So cut, paste, paste, paste. It knows exactly what I'm supposed to be doing with those items. So I've got two versions in there. If I want to do that from the keyboard, I can hold down the Alt key and then, Alt and Shift, and now I can select from the keyboard to fix that. It's a great trick to edit more than one line at a time, whether it's inserting white space. If I wanted to add another attribute here, but onto everything, I could just do space new equals attribute or whatever it is that I'm putting in there. So multi-line edit is a good trick with the use of the Alt key. How many of you know Control-I? Control-I is awesome. It is called incremental search. And watch what happens if I go up to the top of the window. I want to find something. I know it's on this page. I don't know where it is. Control-F is going to take me to a dialogue and then type in. I can press Enter and find an item. Control-I is incremental search. As I type, focus your attention down here where it says ready. And if I do Control-I and then start typing R-E-C, whoops, I must have not have focus in the window there. Control-I, R-E-C. And what's happening if I zoom out and kind of repeat that, rinse and repeat, Control-I, R-E-C, it's searching while I'm typing. So it's called incremental search. And that was, that's been in all versions of Visual Studio. What happens in Visual Studio 12 is we merge together increment with find. So now focus up on this part of the screen. Notice that when I do Control F, instead of a big clunky dialogue that gets in your way of what you're actually looking for, now this shows as a part of the screen. And if I do Control I, it actually uses that same Control F find. It's just a live results. And so if I search for the word enable, as I find it, it highlights it. It's also including it in my find box here, so all my keyboard shortcuts continue to work. F3 would be next, Shift F3 would be previous, and so Control-I and Control-F have merged into a single tool. Now, if you do the drop-down for options here, you'll see that you still have some of the classic things where you can match case, you can match whole words, and you can use regular expressions. How many of you know what, or how many of you use regular expressions on a regular basis? How many of you regularly use regular? have you noticed that Visual Studio has its own private version of regular expressions? Isn't that awesome? I'm happy to tell you that Visual Studio 2012 now uses .NET regular expressions for find and replace.
Yeah. A decade-long bug fix.
Now, if you're like me, you think you know regular expressions, but you really don't. And you need a little bit of help. And so I'll just bring up the dialog of Control-Shift-F, which is find and replace. And if I open up under find options to use regular expressions, watch this little button here. If I turn regular expressions off, that button is disabled. If I turn it on, it's enabled. And what we've done then is we give you some shortcuts, some cheat sheets. Now, if you've already learned the special freaky version of Visual Studio Expressions, then there's a cheat sheet for those down here as well. And the truth is that the regular expressions by Visual Studio did make it easier for you to do specific for search and replace. And so now if I bring that window up and then scroll down to the bottom, you'll see that the Control B for spacer tab, here's the shortcut for the regular expression. But we're now using full regular expressions inside of Visual Studio. So my next tip is multiple copy and paste. It's typically bad to copy and paste with source code with big chunks, but all of us use copy and paste throughout the day. And if I have to copy the word version, Control-C, then I'm going to go somewhere else and paste that, and then I have to come back here, and I want to copy the word recipe. This happens a lot maybe with parameters that are too long to spell if you're in different places in your day, your workflow require multiple copy and paste. I just copied two things on my clipboard. And if I come down here, naturally if I do Control V, it's going to paste that item that's on the top of the stack, right? No, nothing new there, but watch that. Control V is going to, I must not have gotten that on my clipboard. Control, paste, paste, paste. You can paste more than one item in your clipboard. This is a feature of Visual Studio that's been there forever, I think since 2003. In fact, in 2003, there was even a UI around it. Since then, the UI has gone away. But the trick is copy-paste like you normally do, And when you, if you're going to paste through what's called a clipboard ring, which is up to your last, I think, 15 items on your clipboard ring, it's Control-Shift-V. And you'll notice as I use that Control-Shift-V, let me just do a copy on enable, a copy on feature, a copy on metadata. And now as I Control-Shift-V, notice it's highlighted. V again will cycle through everything on my clipboard ring. So Control-Shift-V, it's extremely helpful. It's a little basic thing that's been there forever, but I really love it. And I'm going to let you show call hierarchy, and we'll get back over to you on, okay, on writing code.
All right. So call hierarchy is a feature we added in Visual Studio 2010 for C# only. Visual Studio 2012, we've also added it for VB. Now, yes. Any C++ programmers in here? There's always, yes. Okay. You guys know that we were taking your feature that's been there since Visual Studio 2005. So 2005, it was added for C++, C# 2010, and finally VB 2012. And what this feature does is it allows you to see what calls a specific method or property. So if I press Control-KT, it brings up the call hierarchy window with the piece of code that I have selected, that property, and adds that to the window. And now I can go and see what actually calls that throughout my solution. Okay, and I can see all the various places where that happens. If I click up here, obviously I can navigate to that. I can also see the things that call from it. Now, what's really awesome, I don't have some code that I could go to right now to show you this, but it also will show things that override this, places that implement this interface method. It's very, very useful if you want to get kind of that understanding of the call graph of your source code. So that's call hierarchy, and again, it's VB for 2012, 2010 C#, and C++ has had it forever. So they've been one up on us for a while. Now, we've been kind of looking at a lot of search, a lot of navigation, really a lot of kind of IDE shell features. I want to actually write some code. Is that cool? I think that's where most of us spend a lot of time, really in the editor. And so I want to take a look at that. So the first thing I want to look at is IntelliSense. I like to make the claim that really Visual Studio is just kind of a thick layer around the existence of IntelliSense to help us write our day-to-day code. And so it's a very, very important feature. In 2010, we made some tweaks to it, some important tweaks. And C++ has gotten some of these tweaks in 2012 as well. So the first one I want to show is actually, let me go ahead and add a using for this. Does everybody know that I can press Control dot to bring up that smart tag? That's like the most important keyboard shortcut in all of Visual Studio. When that smart tag appears, Control dot. Now I can add a using statement for this because I don't have using system yet. Okay, so that's very important. Control dot down enter. Now that I've got console and scope, you can see that already IntelliSense filters as of Visual Studio 2010. It filters down. It uses kind of a smart sort of word splitting where it takes your identifier names and splits them. So if I type just line, I would see read line and write line. That word splitting also happens kind of in an interesting way. If I just want to say the first letters of those words, I could type in all caps and just get like, okay, so now we get window left and right line. All right, so that's some of the IntelliSense goodness. Now, another feature that's kind of it's kind of hard to discover, I guess, in Visual Studio, but in Visual Studio 2010, we added what we call suggestion mode. Normally, we think of IntelliSense as being in completion mode. It's just constantly committing based on whatever characters you type. You type space, you type dot. It's going to commit whatever you had selected in IntelliSense into the editor and move on. But that really can become a problem if you like to do, say, test-driven development and perhaps code in more of a consume-first sort of mode where I like to write my code that uses my APIs before I actually go and declare my APIs, right? So IntelliSense really works well on code that's already written. But if, for example, this is my classic case. If I'm in a test class, say a test fixture, and I wanted to, in fact, I was just writing my first test. I'm doing test-driven development. So my first thing is going to be to new up a customer class. So I'm going to type customer space. And of course, I'm going to get customer tests. Okay, so if you program in this style, you're going to be very, very angry, specifically with me, because I actually work on IntelliSense quite a bit. But we've added a feature, and this is in 2010, to allow you to move into what we call suggestion mode. And that's Control-Alt-Space. And what you see now is that the IntelliSense window has shifted a little bit. It still shows customer tests, but it also shows the piece at the very, it also shows at the very, very top what you're typing. And this shifts IntelliSense into a mode that essentially only tab will commit the item from the IntelliSense list. If I type space, if I type open paren, whatever, it doesn't commit the list. Okay? So it's still there. So if I really wanted customer tests, I could get it by pressing tab. But your other commit characters are no longer problematic. So another kind of little cool thing, if you're into the test-driven development, we also, in C# will add customer into the IntelliSense list here,
nice.
Even though it's not, it doesn't exist yet. So as I'm going on with my my sort of, let me get back to that. So I'm going on, so sort of in my test-driven development. In Visual Studio 2010, we added a whole lot of features around being able to generate code quickly. And so you see that smart tag pop up there. I'm going to go ahead and press Control Dot. And now I have an option to go ahead and generate a class for customer. I can choose the default settings. I could also say generate new type. And that gives me a dialogue describing, you know, giving me various options that I want to use. This also exists for Visual Basic in 2010. So I'm going to go ahead, I can generate that class and play around with it. And there's also generate property, generate method, all for that style of development where I want to use the API and kind of get a sense of what it looks like before I actually start going off and declaring classes and declaring members on that. Now, another thing I want to demonstrate, with, especially with a smart tag, because this control dot behavior is so powerful. How many people use the rename smart tag that appears when you go to a definition? How many people have even noticed it? Right? And it's what I'm talking about is if I come here and I just start typing at the end of this identifier as definition, there's a little smart tag that appears. I can take that, control dot, and immediately say, you know what, I'm just going to rename customer. So very, very quickly, all from the keyboard to start typing, I do go to definition, I change the name, press control dot, enter, and I'm already renamed. All right? So very, very much all from the keyboard. Now, Visual Basic has taken some of this a little bit further. I'm actually going to switch over to a little bit of VB right now. VB has had this notion of showing background squiggles, bringing up smart tags for a long time. So if you guys aren't familiar with this, like suppose I had, say, a read-only property. Okay, we'll call it text as string. And then I actually had a setter on it, for example, because that would be useful, I guess. But notice that since Visual Studio 2005, these sorts of problems in your code, both syntactic and semantic problems in your code, Visual Basic has a wealth of corrections for those quick fixes that are available from the smart tag. So you see that there's a smart tag here. And Visual Basic even shows a preview for each item telling you what could be removed. So this is a functionality that's been there since Visual Studio 2005. But if you're a Visual Basic developer, using Control Dot to fix your problems is a huge time saver. Okay? Now, one last thing in writing code. I want to talk about snippets. Somebody asked earlier, can Visual Studio just write your code for you, and I'm not talking about snippets? Well, sorry, man, I'm going to talk about snippets. How many people use code snippets? Quite a few. That's great to see. Just a few things I want to show with code snippets that are a little bit maybe you didn't know on the keyboard shortcut side. So first of all, to expand a snippet, it's double tab. I'm just going to stick in VB here because VB has very rich snippet experience, but a lot of this works in C#, and I'll call it out where it doesn't. So double tab, you notice at the very bottom of this tooltip, it says if you press double tab, it's going to insert the property snippet, and it looks like that. Okay, so there's one tab to actually commit IntelliSense, and then the second tab inserts the snippet. And so I can tab around these fields. I can make changes, for example, and they update throughout the snippet. Now, in C#, there's an experience that when I'm done with the snippet, I press Enter, and that completes the snippet. All the snippet fields go away. In Visual Basic, it's a little bit different. So if I just come outside of the snippet and I start typing something else, the snippet fields go away. Now, in this Visual Basic is a little bit different thing. The snippet fields are actually still there. And in Visual Studio 2008, we added a feature. If you really wanted to get back to that, you could right-click in the editor and say Show Snippet Highlighting. Okay? So one last couple of shortcuts on snippets. There's actually a snippet picker that's very helpful. I can come over to C# and show it to you. The shortcut is Control-KX, and that brings up a window giving you kind of a folder-based view that you can drill through and find, discover all of the snippets on your machine for that particular language. So I can go into Visual C#, I can say, oh, well, I want to do a region, that sort of thing. Okay. Now, VB has taken this way far. And there is a there are a ton of sort of getting started with basic sorts of application tasks. So in here, I could come in here and say, if I wanted to capture the output from a console app, it would generate that code for me. So just one more thing, and that's in VB. This is just tips, right? In VB, if you don't like to press Control KX, you can type *tab, and that'll also bring it up. All right.
How many of you are programming in VB? Good.
Awesome.
A lot of you, right.
Nice.
So we really tried to get a mix, a good mix of C# and VB tricks. So I like that. *tab to show those over. All right, so I'm going to jump back over to my machine, and we're going to jump into a debugging set of tips along with a couple other things. So first I'm going to do Control-Shift-N and set up a new console project. And I'm going to come back to this in a moment, but I want you to notice that it's only asking me for a name. Does anybody kind of look at that screen a little weird? Like, what's missing? What's missing is where your location is. This is something called a temporary project, which is an awesome feature for throwaway code in Visual Studio that doesn't litter your hard drive. I'm going to show you how to turn that on in a minute. But for now, we're going to just open up a blank console app. I'm going to start with the quick watch of something called IntelliTrace. IntelliTrace is something that is part of the Ultimate package. You may or may not have heard of it, and by default, it is turned off. If you turn this on, what happens is while you're debugging, or I should say while your application is running, and if IntelliTrace event happens, all of the memory of your application, all of the scoped variables at that point are saved to disk, and this is almost like a go back in time feature. So let me turn this on, and we'll notice down here in a moment that under advanced, it shows us where this is being written. I'm just going to copy that real quick so that it's on my clipboard. And now let's write just a little bit of throwaway code. So I'm just in a console app. We're going to just do a for loop, 1 to 100,
nice
and console write line. And we'll do something like this, which isn't going to make any sense until my next demo, but I'm kind of setting up for it. Let's say call 1. And we'll pass in I, control period, which will generate that method for me. Let's make this return an int. And I'm literally just going to say return I. Again, that doesn't make any sense right now, but I'm going to use that in a second. Oh, thanks. OK, so with regards to debugging, let's see if I can build. Control-Shift-B to build. If I wanted to debug this application, and I wanted my execution point to stop on line 15, brownie points for how I should do that. What would you say? Initial breakpoint is what? F9, then F5 to run. Did you know you can do that without setting a breakpoint? I just said application execute and stop here. That's called run to cursor. And the keyboard shortcut for that is Control F10. It's a great way to not litter your code with breakpoints. A lot of people debug only by using breakpoints, which is great. It's a great entry-level way of debugging. But breakpoints are so much more powerful than that. Now, if you focus your attention down to the bottom right-hand corner of my screen, you'll notice that I have Solution Explorer. I also have IntelliTrace. If I flip over to IntelliTrace, you'll notice that I have a beginning of application. Now, let's just do some F10s here and step through code. Oh, I pressed the equal sign there, so it tried to edit and continue, which is not allowed. Let me try again, Control F10. Now my IntelliTrace is live, so F10. Let me just walk through.
You're missing a format specifier.
Oh, no, that will return I. Instant edit, I think, is this just two string?
No, you need another format specifier. You've got 0 and 1.
Oh, thank you. There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you. So now F10, we'll walk through. And in particular, what I'm looking at is the right-hand side of the screen where I have all these debuggers. Now, this is my back-end time feature. If I double-click on one of these, my application is going to be scoped as it was running at that time. So it's almost like go back to the breakpoint the way it was. And if I look at my locals window, you'll see the value of I here is, why does it say step recorded? Oh, maybe I have to get into some more.
I think you need to be on line 15 one.
Let's see. So I'm going to come back to the IntelliTrace thing and show you what I was looking at in just a moment. That'll come up plenty more times in the demo. So let's look at the F9 breakpoint. Now, by default, F9 is like it's like the alert. How many of you program JavaScript? Program with JavaScript? When you're debugging with JavaScript as a beginner, you tend to use alerts because that's a nice big in-your-face alert. But what happens if you have that inside of a loop to 100? You're like, escape, 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 escape. Well, the F9 breakpoint is like that as well. In fact, now if I just do an F5 run, you'll see that I can run. And I've got all my normal F10s here that are happening. But what if there's a bug in my application that only happens when I is greater than 80? How do you actually get there? So we can add a condition to our breakpoint. And we can do that over here with the menu. So I can right-click on it and add a condition. And this just takes a string. So I can say I is greater than 80. If that evaluates to true, my breakpoint will get hit. So notice down here my I has a value of 2. If I press F5 to run, now it has a value of 81 because my breakpoint didn't stop all of those times. Now if you do some asynchronous programming, debugging is also a little more difficult because you may have not just stopped all of the threads. This thread stops, but that one didn't. Another thing that you can do is something called a trace point. So everybody knows what a breakpoint is. That breaks the execution. A trace point can write yourself a note, but continue execution. So let's look at that. Up over on the breakpoint menu again, if I go to the when hit, it says do something. So I want to print a message. And it's kind of got this funky syntax here. You'll see the value of x is. I'm just actually going to use that. The value of I is, and you put I inside squirrely brackets. And then it says continue execution. Now visually, when I say OK to this, watch what happens to my breakpoint. In fact, let me just zoom in a little bit. See my breakpoint symbol there? It's going to change to a diamond. A diamond means that it's continuing execution, where the round breakpoint is going to actually stop. So now if I press F5 to run, it's just going to continue to run my application, which runs out. And now if we go back up in my output window, you can see those values, right? So that is a nice little feature there. Let's just go back to setting a breakpoint and F5 to run. Notice that I wrote this kind of goofy code that says, you know, 1 equals 1, which doesn't mean anything. But I was setting up for a feature where you can dynamically jump into a call stack. And I'm sorry, not a call stack, but you're forward executing code. You're on a breakpoint. But you want to choose where you step into. Let me actually set this up a little bit better. So I've got this method here called call. And I'm just going to copy it and paste it. I'm going to create another method here called call to. And again, copy, paste. Change this to call to. And so
change your format.
Maybe I didn't. So these are both going to be the same value. But if I now F5 to run, you find yourself in this example a lot. So you're on a breakpoint, and you have executing parameters. And your parameters are going to call into methods. But you want to get into the ninth method, right? And so you have to step in, step out, step in, step out, step in, step out. Do you guys know the problem that I'm painting? If I do F11, that's step in, and naturally you know Shift F11 is step out. Here's the trick. Shift Alt F11, and watch what happens. Where do you want to go? And I can say, oh, I want to go into call 2. And as I click that, it then executes to call 2. So if you don't already know Shift Alt F11, that is a huge time-saving part of your development mentality. And I say that because as you're debugging, you know, your mind is like a slot machine and there's things happening and you're figuring out problems and you know that that's the problem. And with the editor, the last thing we want to do is make you forget about that. And F11 in, Shift F11 out, F11 in, Shift F11 out. You know, it's mundane to do that. Another thing that you can do, remember I did Control F10 earlier that started the application. And then it stopped on that one single line because that's called run to cursor. You can kind of do that here as well. So if I do F5 to run, I'll get back to my breakpoint. If I just bring my cursor down to line 25 and do Control F10, It will execute, it will run to cursor. I did shift F10 accidentally. Control F10 will run right to that line. So execute to cursor, control F10 is a huge thing. Let me just go back into my step recorder, and you can see my breakpoints there, were being hit from earlier.
Yeah, and the step into specific, that's actually in Visual Studio 2008 Service Pack 1. So if you're still on VS 2008, that's there for you. Use it. It will save
you
time.
Is anybody on 2008? Aww. Wait. Okay, everybody,
sorry.
we're gonna have 4 seconds moment of silence for 2008 users.
Aww.
There you go. Okay. So with that, we're gonna jump into extending Studio 2010. We've got 4 minutes left. If you just bear with us, we've only got two more things to go through, and we'll get you out of here.
So very quickly, I just want to talk about the fact that Visual Studio is super extensible. Okay, and so. Suppose I want to come up here. I go to Tools, Extensions, and Updates. I think in Visual Studio 2010, I think that actually says Extension Manager. But since VS 2010, we've had tons of stuff available from here, all online as well. And so folks have been writing extensions for Visual Studio, and they are available to you, all sorts of great stuff. And you can see that there's kind of a rating system that actually brings things to the very, very top. You see things like indent guides to draw little guidelines, you know, that connect braces and that sort of thing. So if you're the sort of person that really wants to tailor their experience, you can do that very easily within Visual Studio. This is also where you would get the productivity power tools. If you're on VS 2010, you don't have it yet. The next piece I want to talk about, though, very quickly as part of extending Visual Studio is actually NuGet. How many people use NuGet? Well, I don't have to talk about it. No, it's become so part and parcel of the developer's experience to be able to just go and say, you know what, I've got this project, and I need to add X. And instead of having to go out and find some installer and pull things in, and really it's just for that one project, why do I have to do this? Now you can have NuGet packages that carries along with your project. So I can come in here, and I could say, for example, and this is the online is actually kind of working, I think, for a second. And I get a very similar experience as the extensions and updates dialog, but I can search for say something like, suppose I was myself and I wanted to search for Roslyn, and if you guys like to play around with C# and VB source code and do things like that, you can play with the Roslyn CTB, but for example, I could add this to my project just by clicking install, and this will add all of the assemblies needed, for example, for Roslyn, give me license terms, I can accept that, install them into my project, and this actually is split into several different packages, so you can do whatever
nice.
You need. And then I can come in here and say, okay, well, you know what? I would like to parse some source code and do something like syntax tree, and now I've got add using, okay, so I can bring that in. And all I did was create a console app and bring up NuGet and add a package. All right, so now I can just go ahead and say, let's just write this. All right, and you can see I can parse that and I can print it back out to the console.
Nice.
So just very, very quickly, if I just wanted to play with things, I can go get NuGet and I can just play around with that. A couple of other popular extensions, for example, there's the Power Commands, the Visual Studio Power Commands that add a lot of functionality. You know, things like, you know, just this very convenience commands that aren't part of core Visual Studio, like right-click on a pack project and want to edit the project file, for example, things like that. That's another extension I use quite a bit. So. Let's switch over to you since we're almost done.
Yep, we've got one last thing that I promised I would show, architectural diagrams. If you are leaving, do me a favor, make sure you fill out the evals. We worked really hard on these. We hope you like them.
Yep.
So I want to show you this thing called a layer diagram, and it's really important as a developer if you understand the term accessibility modifier. Accessibility modifier means that you have source code that's public to your other classes. There's internal, there's private, there's protected. But sometimes those accessibility modifiers are... the rules are not followed because those really are compiler derivatives where you're saying this code can only be called by this code, but that may not match your business logic. And so what I've done here is I've opened something called a layer diagram, and the layer diagram supports drag and drop, so I literally just dragged on class 1 and class 2, and if you right click, you can add what's called a dependency. And I've just set a dependency on class 1 and class 2, and now that I do that, I can validate my architecture. That's different than the compiler with public and private accessibility modifiers. This says that all of the code in my project can only go from class 1 to class 2. And what's nice about these layer diagrams is you can set them as a gated check-in to TFS. So even though your code compiles, if a developer has on your team has broken the rules and they're calling backwards, like into a database access or something that you only want one way, you can actually stop that. If I reverse this rule and instead over here for class 2 add a dependency diagram and then validate, you'll see that actually I think it failed the first time and now it's passing and I did it backwards. But you get the idea with this layer diagram not just being a visual tool but also being a gated check-in to TFS. So yep. With that, we are out of time and I thank you for your day.
We are... We're actually going to be down at the Visual Studio booth in the Microsoft area down in the Expo Hall in about 15 minutes. So if you guys want to chat further, talk about, you know, some other stuff, talk about stuff you do like, you don't like, feel free to show up.
Please come by.